Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Everyone, welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder at Retzel & Andrus and leader of our healthcare practice. Today, I'm here with Sam Zenayed, who is a business development officer in Huntington's Practice Finance Specialty Division, and who works with dentists primarily, but doctors and veterinarians as well, in terms of lending specifically to those professions. And I think it's great to have Sam here today because we're going to be talking about how a banker can work with a dentist or other type of healthcare provider in acquiring a practice and some of the things they need to think about. Now, we recently did another podcast where we had a lawyer, Todd Erdman, on talking about the legal issues to think about when buying a practice. And one of the things he said is that a key member of your team is definitely your banker, and your relationship with your banker either, you know, makes this deal a success or a failure. So really glad to have Sam here today. And we're going to be talking about the important role that a banker plays in helping you acquire a practice. So thanks for joining me today, Sam.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's quite an honor.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. And I know that what we want to do is kind of run through what you as the banker view as the steps for anybody who wants to buy a practice to think about and to follow. So why don't you jump right in and kind of take us through how you view those steps?
Absolutely. So acquiring a practice can be very complicated and time-consuming process. Taking the right steps from the beginning can help you avoid pitfalls and common mistakes. Just so here's a few steps that I can, you know, advise to have your practice acquisition go more smoothly or startup goes more smoothly. Number one, I always like to focus on making a plan. Outlining your goals at the start will help you stay focused throughout the acquisition process or startup process. Having a clear plan can help you stay true to your vision and avoid making concessions just to keep the process moving forward. That's step one. Always making sure that you write down those plans on paper. That way you can always refer back to it and keep you on track. Number two, very important, is building your team. This is much overlooked. A strong team can help you sharpen your vision and stay on track for success. This team will be with you for the long haul, before, during, and after your acquisition. So it's important to qualify your advisors that align with your values. You will likely use a business banker, broker, a real estate broker to assist you in finding a practice or location. Your team should also include a specific attorney, Erica Adler, a CPA, and your healthcare banker. That's number two. Number three, I always like to focus on finding the right spot. Consider many factors when looking for your future practice. Location may be important to you, but it should not be the only factor you consider. For example, office size, patient base, activity levels are other important characteristics that may impact success. Buying a practice solely based on proximity to your home might not land you the best practice for you. A few extra miles on your commute may be worth getting into a higher opportunity area. Do your own research and consult with your team for guidance. Again, always going back to your team for guidance as you're going through this process. Appraising the practice. There's many different valuation options that people look at in evaluating the practice. For example, debt service coverage. That's something that your CPA and your banker can help you with. That's cash flow of your practice. Also, you want to look at the different procedure mix and the ratios and what aligns to what you do really strong. If you have certain procedure mix that are something that you don't do and you have to refer out, well, that's the loss of revenue. And you want to consider that in part of your evaluation. Evaluations can often be more than just formulas, as they can be affected by many different factors. Consider looking at the goodwill, treatment information, and why the current owner is looking to sell. It may be wise to use multiple valuation methods, and resulting range can help you determine your value. Your team is there to help you guide you throughout the valuation process. Last and least, it's really kind of making an offer. So a letter of intent, or offer to purchase can be prepared to convey your desired terms to the seller for consideration. Now, this may include terms such as purchase price, closing dates, and the role of the parting doctor or dentist, restrictive covenants to the seller, such as the non-compete clauses, and more. As you can see, acquiring a practice is a multi-step, complex, and lengthy process. Contact your advisors to help you guide the process. And that's kind of my five-step outline. And obviously, each one is in more detail as we go through it, but I just want to kind of get you an outline of at least getting started into possibly purchasing and finding the right practice that's good for you. And I never say there's always a good or bad practice. It's about finding the right practice that's good for you.
Okay, great. So one of the things you mentioned was kind of having a plan before you get started. Are you thinking kind of like just a general plan or a formal business plan? And as a banker, is this something that you help your clients prepare? It's something you want to see before you help fund a practice? You know, give me a little bit more information on that.
That's a great question. And making a plan is really kind of listing out your pros and cons. It's something that I help clients do with the due diligence. I represent the buyer in many ways. So I don't just do the financing, but I help the due diligence. I've seen these transactions over and over again, and I know what to expect, and I've seen different scenarios that plan out. So making a plan and writing down what you want, what you're looking for. Now, obviously that plan might change, but at least you have something down on paper of outlining why you're looking to buy a practice or get started with a practice.
Okay. So if you're contacted by somebody to be part of their team, so to speak, what factors are you looking for whether it's a right fit for you? Is it somebody who's a good bet, they know what they're doing? Or is it, you know, is any kind of healthcare provider a good bet? You know, what is it that helps you decide whether you want to be involved or not?
Well, I typically try to get involved anytime. Sometimes it's going to be because we're able to provide the financing for the client and guide them through the appropriate steps. Sometimes it's just getting a financial outlook of where you're at right now, where you want to be, and how do we get there. So timing is also very important. There's never a bad time, I would say, to contact your advisors. It's always good to have a team because, you know, one day, if this is part of your goals that you want to have, be a practice ownership, to get guidance. I know there's many people who look over podcasts and try to gather information. So having a go-to person where you can call their cell phone, call the number, write them an email, ask them simple questions. A lot of times people think of questions and, you know, they forget to ask later. So to be able to get to kind of write those down, make it part of your plan, and just kind of part of your due diligence of the process.
You know, I'm always kind of surprised how involved bankers get, particularly in the dental world, with their clients. You know, I find it unusual in a good way. So, I mean, how involved are you in, you mentioned that you help with the due diligence. So what kind of due diligence do you help with? And I mean, how close are you in working with your client and the other advisors and getting a deal done? You know, it's not like when you go to buy a house, you know, everything's kind of done through the mail or through email with your mortgage broker. You never meet, you rarely talk, et cetera. This is a much closer process. So, you know, how involved do you get? Can you give us a little insight on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So sometimes I have clients, just to kind of give you an idea. I do try to give a value added to every client that I work with. So I try to get in as early as possible, try to have a conversation. Not all doctors are ready to kind of talk. A lot of times they tell me, well, I'll let you know once I make an offer on a practice. And I'm thinking in my head, well, you know, the value that I can add to you in the very beginning could benefit you a lot. So I spoke to a dentist last night, spoke probably over an hour. And it was really about what is going through his mind? What are the pros? What are the cons? He was looking at two different practices, completely different from one another. And he just asking my opinion about pros and cons. And that's exactly what I went through. Now, you know, if you go through this practice, here's the pros and cons. And if this practice, here's the pros and cons. What he failed to understand is what is the value that he brought to the table on either case scenario and what would the outcomes be? So for example, that was just a kind of a consultation process that I had with him. I have not seen one bit of financial information. It's just really kind of talking through things. You're building up that relationship, building up that trust in the beginning. I do like to always send out a checklist. And this is to help pre-qualify individuals before they even find the practice. So it's collecting some basic information, tax returns, personal financial statement, a CV, possibly resume, and being able to determine based on the information in their past history, as they continue to look at a practice, how we can examine that their personal information will align along with the practice that they're looking at. Sometimes it might be over their head, sometimes they're lowballing themselves, and just kind of really understanding what are the pros and cons of going to each practice and giving them an idea of what direction they can go into. Now, as they do find this practice, you know, your team is still with there. So now we're doing the due diligence. We're looking at what are the pros and strengths of the doctor that's looking to buy it, and what are the pros and strengths of the seller that's selling. Does the procedure mix align along with the values that you have? How did you look at it? Not everything is about numbers. Sometimes it's about the actual practice itself. Where is it located? How many operatories does it have in there? Do you have room for growth? You know, what are your vision, your long-term visions that you like to see? And kind of going through that with the client, not just through the numbers, but how his relationship with the doctor, the seller doctor is, and how he's going to be able to treat his patients. And if you have alignment with synergies that mix, you know, it's going to really help a lot, and sometimes not.
Right. So would you say that you really want to develop a relationship before they're making an offer on the practice? I mean, I always say, you know, when clients call me and they've already signed an LOI, I kind of feel like I'm a step behind. So how do you feel about that? Do you want to be involved before they go out and even make an offer? I mean, I would assume you want to make sure that they can qualify for, you know, the size of the loan they're going to need as well, right?
Yeah, and I think relationship is a key to everything. It's the trust factor. It's having credibility with your client, with your banker, with your attorney, with your CPA. You can be, most of the times referrals are the best, you know, clients that I get. Why? Because someone has experienced, has worked with me before, and has been able to give that to the prospecting doctor. However, the doctor himself doesn't know me. So for him to actually get to know me, understand, you know, why I'm saying what I'm saying and how we're going to be able to work through the process, this is going to help him. So when the time comes and when he does find a practice, that he's going to feel secure with his team and knowing that his team is giving him the best advice for the doctor.
Well, how, I mean, it does happen that they sign LOIs before they talk to their banker. So how quickly is the turnaround time on being able to approve somebody to get funded? How long does that take?
Well, I can't speak about every bank, but I can speak about Huntington. And within Huntington, some of the, you know, advantages that we have is we like to make it easy for the doctor to apply, and we have one of the fastest approval times in the industry. Our approval times are with 3 to 5 business days.
Wow. So if you sign a letter of intent, you know, leading to your actual documents, and this is something we were talking about in our legal discussion of this topic, often a condition to closing is to actually get the funding, right? Is there ever a time where somebody's been approved for funding and then during the due diligence process, something changes your mind about whether that funding is still approved? I always wonder whether, you know, you get that far along and you actually won't get the funding. Does that ever happen?
It's a very rare, but it does happen. I've had incidents where it's happened and the doctors actually thank me. So just to give everybody an idea of the process is, I initially send out a checklist of items I like to collect, even before they find the practice. Once I have that, once they find the practice, once they sign the LOI, we engage on getting the approval. As we submit this information to underwriting, there's lots of things besides financials that we actually look at. You know, we tell the story. We tell, you know, what are the pros and cons of the doctor? Why is he buying this practice? Why is the seller selling this practice? You know, we look at the pre and post acquisition, how it's going to look beforehand and afterwards. Everything checks out, great, we get an approval. Once we get an approval, clients get a commitment letter from their bank, which outlines the rates and terms. If they're okay with that, then we move on to the next step. Next step is closing, essentially, is picking out a date. When do you want to close by? Is it 30 days out, Is it 60 days out? Once we're able to determine that, we like to collect all the closing checklists, we like to say. So if they're forming a new entity, and whether it's real estate they're purchasing, such as getting an evaluation, an appraisal on the building, things can affect and communication can break down. That's why it's super important. It's a very critical step between signing that purchase agreement and being able to close, and many things can come in the way. Now, there's been times where there's been an approval, and as we're going through the process, something pops up. I've had an instance where a client was buying a practice and looking at their collections and revenues for the practice, and it ended up being that the revenues of the practice wasn't all from the actual practice itself, and some of it was from the doctor's independent contract work from other places, which would not be included in the sale. Now, the doctor didn't know that until we were able to do our due diligence, bank's due diligence, and be able to figure that out. And once we did, the doctor was very happy to know that that we were able to find that and kind of backed out of the deal. Now, we never try to get in the way of a doctor buying the practice and selling the practice. We try to provide the financing, but we all try to do the right thing for the doctor and have the due diligence and make sure the communication level, that everybody's under the same assumption. Because the worst thing you want to do is have complications at the very end or even after the loan.
I would assume that if you're buying a practice that has kind of a proven record, it's a little bit easier to get financing than if you were going to start a practice from scratch, let's say, just because, you know, there's no track record, right? Like, what are you using to, you know, as financials to support that? Would you agree?
Well, it can go both ways. I've seen situations, you know, I think it's a lot more complicated when someone's looking to, you know, buy an existing practice, because there's more factors you got to factor into it. The reason why banks do startup loans is we've done the research on medical and dental practice, and we know there's a small default rate, and we're comfortable with that. With going into an acquisition, there's more factors to consider when getting that approval. One is, again, the pre and then the post acquisition. How does it look now? How is it going to look afterwards? And being able to put that all together and making sure that the practice that the doctor is buying is going to be able to, one, pay for its loan, but also pay for the personal liabilities that the buyer currently has. So when we put that all together, you know, it can get complicated, and there's many different scenarios. With a startup practice, we do have certain criteria that we like the doctor to be at. One is, you know, wants to be in clinicals for a couple of years. Two, we look at certain liquidity issues. We look at credit score. And then we look at their business plan as far as what they're looking to do, how big they're looking to do, and seeing if that all fits within the parameters that we do a startup practice.
Makes sense.
Both are complicated, but it really just depends.
Right. Are you still seeing a lot of practices being acquired right now? Are there a lot of loan activity in terms of buying practices?
Absolutely. I don't think it's ever stopped. We were one of the only banks during COVID that was still lending out there. A lot of banks put pauses just because we didn't know what was going to happen. There's always going to be doctors that are retiring. There's going to always be doctors that are relocating out of state. And there's going to be young and fresh doctors that are looking to either start a new practice or existing doctors that are looking to expand. I think there's great value into whether you're starting a practice or whether you're going to acquire a practice. It really just depends on what's right for you. And that's something, obviously, when we talk, that we can go by a step-by-step process and making sure what fits with you personally and how that's gonna work out.
That's great. All right, so I think we've kind of covered everything we wanted to cover on this topic. It sounds to me like, you know, before anybody should go out and buy a practice, they really need to kind of get a grip on their plan, on their team, and making sure their financials are in order so they kind of know what they're about to undertake. You've done a great job summarizing that for us. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share on this topic?
I would just say my final thought is, I know the process can be, you know, acquiring a practice or starting a practice is a multi-step, and it's very lengthy, and it can be very stressful from beginning to end. And that's why it's really important to have a strong team ahead of you to be able to lean on, to be able to guide you through that process, to be able to, you know, those moments of stress to make your life easier. The better the team you're going to have, the less stress you're going to have in life. And you know, go with individuals who have done it. Be very specific with your advisors. I know I see a lot of advisors that are out there that are not dental, medical, or vet specific. So I think it's really important to have someone with that niche experience. And if you ever want to have a free consultation, we're here. I'm here to help you as well as yourself.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sam, and thanks to all of you. This is the Health Law Hotspot, and I'm Erica Adler from Retzel & Andrews. You can check out our other podcasts at ralaw.com. And as always, you can feel free to reach out to either one of us if you have any questions. We'll be sharing this with all of Sam's contact information as well. So don't be shy, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for joining us.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.